To welcome you to the work session for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is the 18th of February, Tuesday, 2014. It's currently 6:06 p.m. I'd like to call our work session to order. The only item that we have to do this evening is some training on open and public meetings. It'll be given by City Attorney Eric Johnson. So, Mr. Johnson, if you want to come up to the podium, if you're comfortable with that, time is yours.
Two weeks ago, I was giving training at Mona City on Open and Public Meetings Act, and my partner David Church was giving the same training to Alpine City. And he said one of the reasons he was giving that training to the Alpine City Council was because their auditor had caught that their city council had not been trained the year before, at least had not noted that it had received that training. And so the most important thing we can do today is make a record that you're getting trained on the Open and Public Meetings Act, because that is required by law. The law does not expressly dictate just what has to be in Open and Public Meetings Act training. So I'll just cover a few highlights. It is a premise behind our form of government that the elected officials are elected to represent the citizens, that the power of the government comes from the consent of those who are governed. And so it is important that the government be handled in a way that those who are governed can observe and understand what is happening. And actually, although we can talk about the public in general, I'll be perfectly frank. I think the Open and Public Meetings Act has its greatest employ when there are friction points within an elected body, so that there isn't someone who the others kind of feel like, we'll just leave them out of this decision. Go ahead and have a meeting. So it requires that the city annually post an annual meeting notice for each of the public bodies, which will include the City Council and the Planning Commission, and that be posted at the city offices. It should also be posted throughout the year here, where most of those meetings are held. It also should be sent to the paper and be posted on the Utah Public Notice website. Yeah, these are all done. And a meeting that is held on a date other than those is called a special meeting. If you're meeting at the time and place on the annual meeting notice, that is a regular meeting. A special meeting, for example, if this body were to convene as the City Municipal Building Authority, since that body only meets on an as-needed basis, by definition, there is no annual meeting notice, there are no regularly scheduled meetings, and so all of their meetings are special. Then for any particular meeting, even those that are on the annual meeting schedule, you have to have an agenda in order to take action on anything. And that agenda has to be posted. It should be posted at the City Hall. It should be posted here. It needs to be sent to paper and also posted on the Utah Public Notice website, all at least 24 hours before convening this meeting. And that doesn't mean that there can't be things that come up during the meeting that are not on the agenda. For example, you very often ask the public if they have any comments. They can raise anything they want that may or may not be on the agenda, and you can talk with them about that, and you can talk among the council about it. You just can't take any action items. You can't make any final decisions on something that is brought up that is not on the agenda. There is an exception for emergencies, but Emergencies are usually easily identifiable and rather rare. And emergencies are not, missed getting it on there. That doesn't constitute an emergency. But it's usually something, I can think of some emergency items that have happened here in Cedar Hills over the years. One year there was some flooding happening down on the golf course. Another year there was a mudslide up on the mountain. In those cases, the city council would be justified in convening and taking action to respond to an emergency and taking whatever actions would be needed. As a general rule, your authority as a city council ends at the city boundaries. And so it would be improper for you to decide to hold a city council meeting outside of the city boundaries and take action on things outside of your jurisdiction. Some people say, well, what if at the semi-annual League of Cities and Towns meeting, we decide to hold a city council meeting while we're all down there? I've had this come up from more than one community. And just take action on things. We're still in the state of Utah. And my question is, well, what stops you from going to Cabo San Lucas? Hey, Hawaii.
Why? Why not?
Once you leave the jurisdiction, where's the limit, right? And there isn't. There are some special provisions that do allow you to take site visits and otherwise to have meetings outside of the city boundaries for limited purposes, but my counsel is to always never take any action anytime you're getting together outside the city boundaries. So all action items need to take place here within the city. Getting items on the agenda, the mayor controls the agenda. He puts on the agenda the things that he feels are appropriate. Obviously, he consults with staff in doing that. However, also, any two council members can also request that any item be placed on the agenda, and it will be there. Let me also touch upon electronic meetings. There is no such thing as a proxy for a council member. If you are not present, you cannot tell someone else how to vote in your absence. Okay? However, it is possible, if properly noticed, that you can participate electronically, and there are a couple of additional requirements for electronic meetings, in which case you can call in and be on the phone or something like that.
What are the rules in regard to noticing that?
What's that?
Did you say there are rules in regard to noticing if I was to call into a meeting?
Yeah, it just needs to be noticed on the agenda about that it'll be electronic.
Every one of our agendas on the very bottom.
That's what I thought.
It said that participants may need to call in or make a question. It's just on every
single agenda. Right, and that's my recommendation. You just always prophylactic. Put that there in case there's ever a need that arises that someone needs to. I've never been pushed to the limit where there could never be three in attendance in person. I don't know how it would happen if everybody decided to be gone at the same time. Still hold it electronically. Let's try not to push those boundaries. The law really doesn't address that. So that's the basic things on the Open and Public Meetings Act. Are there any questions, concerns?
I think one question that typically comes up is when council members happen to meet coincidentally outside of council time.
You mean like mm-hmm. a Walmart or something?
It could be here at the rec center, just happening to wander through. I mean, it could be anywhere.
You can gather socially. Okay. Anytime
you want. We can go out to dinner.
Yes. All of you can. And that's A-okay. My admonition would be, you know, just be careful not to talk about city business when you're gathered socially. You can bump into each other. Okay, let me get into a few more of the details. Any two of you can talk about city business anytime, anywhere. Okay? And that's perfectly fine. But if there's three of you, and again, if this is a chance meeting at Walmart or social or whatever, just refrain from talking about city business. The peculiarity in my eyes under Utah law is that there was a question a few years ago about, well, if three or more of you communicate via email, is that an illicit communication? In other words, do you have to give public notice 24 hours in advance in order to do that? And there was a law passed, and expressly under Utah law, email communications do not violate the Open and Public Meetings Act. You can all communicate via email all you want. However, as you know, those emails are subject to grammar requests, so they are open to the public.
Just a quick question. My understanding is that in a city meeting, you could actually have two council members and the mayor, and you're still not violating. You have three members there. Is that correct or is that incorrect?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Because you only have two voting members.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess what you're saying is, if I'm standing outside the recreation center and I'm talking to a fellow council member about an agenda item, we're not trying to take action, we're just having a discussion, and a third council member then exits the meeting and comes upon us, we should stop talking about city business at that point.
Yeah, you shouldn't rope them in and keep the discussion going.
The most likely places here after our meetings to have that happen, and I never thought about that until you mentioned it, but I would assume even after a meeting just discussing here, we probably ought to be careful with that too, inside the building.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I you know, I've not encountered a concern where people aren't fairly careful about that. And I'm not saying it's never happened that three council members haven't started talking about some city business, but it's been my experience that it doesn't go too far before someone says, oh, hey, we probably shouldn't take this further. And so let me just repeat. It's not illegal for you to email each other and have everybody included. Some people have maintained that from time to time, but that's perfectly legal.
Is there any legality as far as sharing emails or sharing information from emails among city members where it's not in a executive session? That's kind of been a little bit of a question the last couple of weeks. To what extent are you able to share information from those emails?
Okay, let me address that. When it comes to executive sessions, which are for only very limited purposes, it is wrongful to discuss those things outside of the closed executive session. Okay? So you should not discuss those things with members of the public. Let me give the example I like to. I have not with Cedar Hills, but with other communities. One in particular, I can think of several examples. I was in closed executive session dealing with litigation past midnight. The next morning I get up, I go to work, and before 9 a.m. my phone rings and opposing counsel calls me and tells me everything that transpired in the executive session. Okay. Someone did something wrong. And under grandma, you get in trouble for that. Let me talk about emails I'll use an example where I'm copied on the email. If it's an email among city staff and officers, and I'm copied, that email enjoys attorney-client privilege. It would be wrongful for anyone at the city, any one person, to decide, you know what, I'm going to disregard the attorney-client privilege, I'm going to forfeit it and tell someone outside that circle of communication about this email. I'm going to forward it to them or share it with them or even just share the contents of it without actually showing the whole thing. Okay? The email, as has been established, is city property. Okay? And you would need to seek the vote of the city council in order to waive the attorney-client privilege. You'd have to have a majority vote in order to do that. Some protocol items, and let me just address this as a little bit of an aside from the Open and Public Meetings Act, but one of the challenges that arises consistently, it's not unique to Cedar Hills, however it also exists here, is interaction with staff. The chief executive officer is the mayor, okay? It gets very challenging. I'll use myself as an example. As a city attorney, if I get phone calls from two separate council members asking me to weigh in on the same issue on separate sides. Okay? And that's true for every member of staff. Okay? For that reason, it's best served with limited exception, you would want to go to Mayor Gigi and talk to him, and then if he says, yeah, go ahead, call Eric about that, that's great, okay? But that way, the communication has a single channel, and it's more in the same direction, and I'm not put in a compromised position, okay? I guess the question comes up then, if someone doesn't follow that channel of communication, go through the mayor and maybe he'll tell David to contact me or however, or maybe it's dealing with Chandler, it goes from the mayor to David to Chandler. What should you do? Okay? I will tell you this, very difficult as staff to respond to a council member. You know, you kind of broke the chain of command. It's very uncomfortable. Okay. So it's nice if you never put us in that position. There's also, I think, one of the things you as a council may want to consider is how do you self-police? If you see someone else break the chain of command, do you just sit by and let it fall entirely on the mayor's shoulders to say, hey, wait, you should have come to me? Or do you kind of remind each other, you know, hey, you know, that's something that if it were me, I think I would have gone to the mayor instead of going there first. Okay. So that will be something for you all to kind of work through on the chain of command. And like I say, it's an issue that every community wrestles with. And the balance, frankly, really is for the mayor to establish, just where that balance is. And I think Mayor Gigi's probably been fairly clear with everyone as to what his preferences are. So.
I've got a couple of follow-up questions real quick.
Yeah.
So you talked about going through Mayor Gigi if we have a question for you. Is that what you're talking about? Like, say I had a question for the attorney, I'd want to go through Mayor Gigi and then ask permission to call you or have him call you. Is that what you're saying?
You know, that's been the protocol ever since I've been the city attorney.
Okay.
Not just with Mayor Gigi, but with Mayor Richardson and before him, Mayor McGee.
When we were at our retreat. It seems like you said the other way, that any council person can call you anytime. So I'm just, I feel like I'm getting two different answers here.
Well, I believe I said with limited exceptions. Okay. That's the standard. Certainly, if there's something of a confidential nature, certainly if there is a concern you have with the mayor, those would be times that you would come directly to me. Just like if you have a concern with me, you have to have someone else you can talk to about your concern about me.
And the other follow-up question. So if the attorney is included on the emails, then it can't be shared. Are there any rules at all about sharing if the attorney is not included on email correspondence?
Let me say this. All the emails are city property. You do not have any power to decide yourself unilaterally when the city property should or should not be shared. I mean, that's, neither do I, right? That is a city decision which takes a vote of five. And so let me put it this way. It is a misdemeanor if you improperly share city information. And if there's any private protect or privilege information, what is shared, that is a misdemeanor. And and the law states public employees and other persons, which is peculiar because in another place it just refers to public employees. I would submit that elected officials fall under the rubric public employees, but it says public employees and other persons with access to public records cannot improperly share those things. And like I say, again, they're city records, and you need permission of the council to share.
So question on that. I'm assuming you mean the actual physical record, but not necessarily the content. So, for example, if Trent decided, hey, I've been talking to my neighbors, and we want to build a library, and I think we should spend $100,000, and we're going to move forward on building this library. And so I went and said, well, I'm going to talk to 20 residents and see what they think of that proposal about building this library. That's perfectly fine, because you're sharing, asking questions about a proposal, but not necessarily forwarding the email.
I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That so we can talk about city business that's not private.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but then again, you run into the circumstance if someone decides to share something that someone else says, I didn't mean for you to share that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to share those things, I'm not going to share with you.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So sorry, Trent, you can't build a library.
Is a little bit unacceptable then. Paraphrasing someone else's email and forwarding that on is unacceptable.
Well,
But you can share your own emails to other people, I would assume.
What do you mean, your own emails?
You can share information, if I send an email to the city, I could forward that on to other people, I would assume.
No.
City.
No, you cannot.
City.
Okay.
No, that is city property. You are acting as an elected official at that point, and that's.
So even with permission of the person that sends it, you can't forward it on. You can't say, "Hey, do I have permission to state some information from your email?" You can't do that.
You should use caution and discretion. Let me put it this way: mm-hmm. Is there a large body of law that has defined all the wrinkles for this? There is not a large body of law that has defined all the wrinkles. And so I would urge you to use wisdom and discretion and say, really you need to decide where your alliance and allegiance is. Most would say, by virtue of being in this body, here's where your first alliance and allegiance lies. And you would want to do nothing that would compromise that. Okay? And it isn't that you're not going to have other friends throughout the community, but you would use your discretion to make sure that you didn't compromise your relationship here. in order to foster another relationship elsewhere. That's just my recommendation. And I've seen it in other communities. Frankly, I've had council members in other communities say, I am not going to communicate with that other council member on this topic. Because when I do, they share it over here where I don't want it to be shared. And they stop communicating with that council member. That's unfortunate. That causes unnecessary friction points. In my experience, it always diminishes the effectiveness of the city council.
Can you share with us anywhere where it talks about that in any legal code somewhere? The most clear spot that it's communicated in legal code?
About what?
Communicating what this topic we're talking about, emails being shared. Can you just find the most clear-cut place in the code where it says you cannot do what you said you cannot do, or you cannot forward emails? I just want to see how it reads.
I think he just gave you the clear-cut definition.
Right. I'd like to see the code.
The Grandma Act is what talks about this.
Okay.
Okay. And, this city has gone to the Records Committee to get clarification as to just how broad...
Mm-hmm.
How broad emails are that are public records. Let me put it this way. If you have an email with a private citizen, you and a private citizen, on your personal email account, that is a public record. You need to be handing that over to Colleen. We ask you to do that at least monthly, if not more often. And, then another council member would not have the right to then take that email and share it with others.
See, I can follow whatever the rules are, as long as everyone plays by the same rules. Then I think that's something I can adhere to. It's something that I'd like to do. But I really would like to see if there's anything written somewhere that discusses this exact email thing. It would be nice to see the code on that too.
I'm not sure that Grandma uses the term email. Okay. It just defines public records,
mm-hmm.
Okay, generically, of which emails have been determined to be part of the public record. Okay, so, that's...
Can you maybe spend a couple of minutes talking about when is it that a record becomes a public record as opposed to raw data?
I'm not sure I quite follow the question.
Well, and this relates to a lot of... the grandma thing that we're going through, because we have a citizen whose interpretation of the code is that public records are all emails that are before they've gone through any legal review, so, or even any compiling. So it's just raw data. So in your professional opinion, what is the process whereby emails or some sort of correspondence becomes the public record?
Well, I guess a public record can contain private and protected information, but as far as the public's access to a public record, the public's access to it does not occur until after it's been reviewed, because the city is just as obligated to strip out private, protected, and privileged information as it is to deliver information that is not private, protected, or privileged. It the exact same penalty on either side, so that the city has to walk that tightrope. You have to hand them over all the stuff that's public, but none of the stuff that ain't. I was reading a case today by the Records Committee that said even where a public employee for UDOT had a communication with, let me back up, I may have shared some of this with you before. There's a situation where there was a contractor for UDOT. This public employee who was female became acquainted with the employees for the contractor, and in particular there was one employee, and some of their communications were personal in nature. They were not about UDOT business anymore. They were personal. And the Salt Lake Tribune tried to get hold of those communications. They said, hey, it was on a cell phone issued by UDOT, a UDOT email account, everything for the state. And the records committee said, that may be true, but that doesn't mean the public gets access to it. And so if it is personal in nature, even if it is on a city email, then that doesn't mean the public gets it. And so I'm not, when you use the term a public record, I guess I'd be a little hesitant to make hard and fast statements about what, you know, what is or isn't, but I am sure that whether it is considered a public record or not, you cannot hand it over if it's private, protected, or privileged. And so you have to go through the review to check. You have to.
So can you drill down a little bit further then? Because again, a resident is claiming that his right is to view at any time the public records that are of the city at any time for free if they're in the public interest. So can you tell us your interpretation of that part of the code?
So the at any time is absolutely incorrect. Okay. There are things that are considered public records. For example, there are police files. There are things like the water source information for the city of Cedar Hills. Yeah, that's public information. It's a public record, but the city is never entitled to that. And so turning to emails, emails are a little different than some other public records. For example, city council minutes, those are also, you know, that's kind of the quintessential public record is city council minutes. There's a draft of the city council minutes. That draft did not necessarily open to a grandma request until the minutes have been approved and adopted by the city council, because it may change. Okay, and so until that action is taken, someone can ask for it, and you just say, well, you know, yeah, there's a draft, but no, you don't get it. And you won't until the city council finalizes it. And the city council minutes are vetted. They're prepared, they're reviewed, the council looks them over, the council approves, right? And you're going to make sure that private, protected, and privileged information isn't there. And there's a lot of city records where the private, protected, and privileged information, there's already been a review for that. So when someone asks for it, nobody needs to call me and say, Eric, is there any private, protected, or privileged information here? It's already been reviewed for that. But there's other records where, just because there's a high cost in going through that analysis and review, that doesn't happen. Emails are probably the classic example of that. There's just so much email traffic that to have someone automatically review every email for private, protected, and privileged information would be exceptionally costly with very limited benefits. And so usually the only time that review happens is if they are requested. You then go through it, and only the email records or the portions of the email records without private, protected, privilege information then can be disclosed to a member of the public. Did that answer the question? Now let me turn to getting things for free. I don't suppose that you've all had a chance to read my massive brief from September of 2012. So let me review the highlights of that.
I did read about 75% of that, by the way.
You're amazing.
I read it back in 2012.
Yeah, and I read it too. So it's been a while.
But let me address emails for free. What did I do here? Here we go. There the city is entitled to charge some small fees related to a grandma request. Copy charges are one. Compiling fees are another, where it's just where you're pulling the information together in the format or in the organization that they want it. And you're entitled to charge to pull that together. The city has routinely done that over the years. And that then creates a situation of equal protection, that if that's what you do for others, that's what you need to do all the time. And for example, not too long ago, a law firm wanted a certain amount of information from the city. The city pulled it together. The law firm paid the cost to pull that information together and copy it and deliver it to them. The city absolutely wants to be able to charge under those circumstances, okay? So generally that's a wise policy. There are some limited circumstances where that can be waived and you're not violating the Equal Protection Clause. And the one under consideration is whether something is primarily, whether it primarily benefits the public. There's kind of a presumption that if a newspaper makes a records request that it primarily benefits the public. They're considered to be neutral, unbiased, and reporting for the public good. Let me address Mr. Cromar in particular when it comes to personal versus personal benefit versus public benefit. And that is, what does he use the emails for? We know from the last time he made a grandma request for emails that he uses them to advance his personal political agenda. How do we know that? We can go on Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government website. We can look at what he posted. Does he just post the information? No. He editorializes. He gives his political opinions about those. For example, one of the things he gave his political opinion on were emails about an employee with the city here with the recreation center saying, hey, you want me to explore the possibility of serving alcohol here at the recreation center? It really, and I mean, there's all sorts of evidence that selling beer to golfers would increase the number of rounds of golf and also increase concession sales. I don't think that's any big mystery. But Mr. Cromar expressed his opinion of just how horrible it was. Well, look, what was being asked was not illegal. It's absolutely legal to have alcohol sales. And there's nothing wrong with saying, do you want me to look at maximizing revenues by doing something like that? And so I use that as an example of how he uses the emails and other records that he gets through a grandma request to advance his personal political ambitions. And let me read to you what...
Eric?
Yeah?
I don't want to rush you. You've got about 5 more minutes. Is that okay?
Yes, that is fine. I am sorry. Okay, here it comes. Here is what Idaho Supreme Court said about expending public funds to advance political objectives. Indeed, every court which has addressed the issue to date has found the use of public funds for partisan campaign purposes improper, either on the ground that such use was not explicitly authorized or on the broader ground that such expenditures are never appropriate. Underlying this uniform judicial reluctance to sanction the use of public funds for election campaigns rests an implicit recognition that such expenditures raise potentially serious constitutional questions. A fundamental precept of this nation's democratic electoral process is that the government may not, in quotes, take sides, close quotes, in election contests or bestow an unfair advantage on one of several competing factions. A principal danger feared by our country's founders lay in the possibility that the holders of governmental authority would use official power improperly to perpetuate themselves or their allies in office. The selective use of public funds in election campaigns, of course, raises the specter of just such an improper distortion of the democratic electoral process. And in that case, a special district in the state of Idaho used public funds to advance the position that they preferred in an election. But the same holds true. So it would be improper to use public funds to pay for a grandma request and the compilation costs for someone if they use that for their own personal political purposes. And that's just true across the board. And that was the ground that the council, there are only two voting council members left from that council. It wasn't that long ago. But Jenny and Trent, and then Gary was also on the council at the time. That was the basis of their decision to deny granting Mr. Cromar's grandma request in March, on March 5th of 2012 for free. And that was the grounds on which the State Records Committee unanimously upheld the decision of the city to deny handing those over for free. I'll just simply state, I believe that if you were to fulfill Mr. Cromar's December 9th, 2013 grandma request for free, that you would be violating constitutional principles and using public funds to advance personal political ambitions. And so I don't believe you could do that. I've used up my time, but Mayor, is there time if there's a question or two?
Council, any quick questions for Mr. Johnson? And they would really have to be quick.
No.
If not, then I'm going to give you guys, looks like about 12 minutes. If you want to take your breaks, get drinks, whatever you'd like to do, and we'll start right at 7 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.